and welcome to How To Medieval, the how-to where two guys show you how to do it between the two of them. My name is Ari.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're going to talk about reenactor burnout. More importantly, we've had all this time to stay at home and not do our events, and we are looming on, or rather the horizon for being able to do lots of events again is looming, and it is important, just like weight training, not to jump back in after you've had a moment to atrophy and get ourselves burnt out by doing too many events that we're not used to doing and trying to overdo what we like and sort of create acrimony where there should only be joy. So that's what we're going to talk about today, and maybe some of the ways that we think we can help ease back into reenacting and doing our living history events in person going forward as things presumably and hopefully progress towards a less distant future or less socially distant future.
Speaking of a less socially distant future instead of a, and I like how you said less socially distant instead of just a non-socially distant, I think one of the biggest ways to avoid disappointment going back into all this is thinking that events are going to be exactly the same as they were.
I think it may be a generation before things are exactly as they were, if they ever really are again. Granted, I mean, at some point things got back to what we experienced after, like, the, you know, flu pandemic of the early 19th century or 20th century. And so, like, eventually they will, but it's not going to be this next year. And to be honest, there's lots of people out there who are probably perfectly okay with that. This has been sort of the introvert revolution, I guess. And I am not a huge fan of touch. Like, I don't like to be, like, there's people that I, you know, I'm comfortable with physical contact with, but the average person, like, I have a fairly, like, the 6 foot bubble was pretty much like where I liked people to be in the first place. And so, you know, not necessarily going straight back up to nose with everybody around me isn't necessarily an awful thing in my estimation.
I'm going to make some t-shirts for us. They're going to say no hugs for Ari.
There we go. That's right. Well, no, that's the thing. I'm not against them. I'm just not a huge fan of them.
No, I understand.
I'm a connoisseur of hugs, I suppose. I'm not
just... Ooh, yeah. Connoisseur of hugs. That doesn't sound creepy at all.
No, it doesn't. We don't want that t-shirt.
No. But no, I understand exactly what you're saying. And it actually, in a lot of circles, it has made some people feel less uncomfortable having that built-in mandated personal space, which may be have been their personal space anyways. It's like there's that joke about, I think it's like Finland or something. It says the Finns were really happy when they were told that the 3 meter separation for COVID was ending, so they could go back to their normal 6 meter separation.
Oh, that's funny.
But so yeah, it has been great. It has sort of been an introvert's revolution because a lot of places went to sort of virtual events. The SCA had their sort of shticky way of calling them ethereal events. And some of them were a lot of fun. And I actually was, believe it or not, I was more active in SCA events during these virtual events than I was back when I could go to normal events, because I didn't have to take the time to travel to them. I could just, boom, I'm there. I put together a display or something online and I send it in and I'm there and I can answer questions and do things. And I'm really hoping that those don't go away. Everything has to find its balance, of course, in this brave new world we're entering. And I'm starting to see the pendulum swing back the other way in an overcorrection where basically all the online events, nobody's publishing them anymore and they're all going back to physical events. And it'll level out eventually, I'm sure. But yeah, so I think my point is, when you start going back to an event, even if it's an event that you've been going, well, not even, especially if it's an event you've been going to for 20, 30, 40 years, don't expect it to be exactly the same as it has been for the rest of those. You'll actually be happier at the event if you are honest with yourself saying, this is going to be different than what I'm used to. but it's still something I love, and I still get to see people who I like seeing, so it should still be a good time.
And you make a really good point about being able to access certain events. My timeline for being able to go to Australia myself is, I mean, I couldn't even put a date on it. As much as I would love to visit the Australian reenacting crowd, because they've got a great living history mojo going out there, I realistically, there are things in my life that take up my travel time that will probably always be a priority over a reenactment trip to Australia. But I have been able to participate in that scene in a way that I would never have been able to access before. And so there is a lot of, like I said, we've talked about this a little bit, about the globalization of this hobby, that we could stand to retain a lot of that, especially when you're saying, especially when it comes to things that are like, maybe you were talking about making submissions. So I guess you're talking about like the ANS events, where there's people who can make stuff that, what are you going to do with it anyway? You're going to take pictures of it to display it at ANS events anyway. If you build yourself a house in your backyard, like, you're not going to take that to the event. You're going to take documentation of it.
If you build yourself a trebuchet, if somebody was crazy enough to build a trebuchet,
you're not going to lug that thing. Now, even if this was like no internet timeline, like the alternate timeline internet doesn't exist, you're not going to bring probably your full size two-story trebuchet or the house you built in on your property to an event to display it, even in a competition. You're going to take digital or film documentation of it. And so this is not that different, and it allows you to go to places that you can't physically go to, which means that there are people who are able to share their skills and be recognized in places that the only barrier to entry was physical presence. And I really hope we don't lose too much of that, especially since, you know, like you're saying, people going back and going, okay, well, I've done this event for 30 years. So I know not necessarily the living history community as a whole necessarily has this problem as much, but I know that there is an issue sometimes in the SCA where, oh, but this activity has been done this way for so long, and so we always did it this way, so we should always do it this way, and kind of an inertia, or honoring, you know, this particular event honors a particular person that was influential in the SCA 17 years ago, and no one who currently goes, there's like 6 people left who know that person. And so I would actually suggest probably the best way to approach events to avoid burnout, or if nothing else, discouragement, is to treat every event we go to in 2022 as a brand new event. Like, at some point, we just need to acknowledge that there has been a broken line for every event. And so we're starting fresh. Now we have things to reference from how this event used to be, but we're not doing that same event anymore. I don't think anyone has an event that they can technically say that they're going to have an uninterrupted line of doing, because we've all had them disrupted and they're never going to come back, like you said, the same way.
Yeah, I can't think of any events attended in 2020 or even 2021 here that was anything like I'd ever been before. And yeah, there is that broken line. I think you're right. So the big event I usually go to every year is a war up here called Great Northeastern War. And I love it. It's the biggest event I usually ever go to. But it's not going to be the same. We haven't had it for 2 years. It's not going to go back to being the same as it was before we stopped having it. I think that there are probably new ways and interesting ways that it will change at the event organizers. I think it would actually deserve event organizers to try to make events exactly the same before they stopped. Make them familiar so people recognize them as being the event, but trying to make them exactly the same is going to be difficult, because there's just going to be things that, you know, for the foreseeable future, we're just not going to be able to do.
Well, also, and that puts a lot of burden on, you know, my revelation here. Oh, these are all new events. That does put a unique burden on these event organizers, because though we are doing what is ostensibly the same event with these large gaps and these huge changes that we have to implement to bring these back online. And they are effectively creating new events from the ashes, like phoenixes, from the ashes of these old events. That's one place we need to focus on, is making sure that we do support these people who are organizing events, because they're doing so in effectively hostile territory. You know, they don't have the same luxuries to set up these events in the same way as people have in the past. They can't run these events on autopilot. They don't necessarily have access to the same locations with the same ease. There's so many new restrictions on them that I would suggest perhaps trying to share the load of event organization if you have the manpower to do so, because it is a team effort to try and come back and do these events with the same level of intensity that they were done before, with all the new hurdles we have ahead of us.
And I think we should be very, as an event-going crowd, we should be try to be very understanding when an event doesn't come back. Now, there are some events out there that are basically tradition events that have become very difficult to run because basically nobody wants to run it. Maybe attendance has been down for the past few years. They may have used the pandemic as their sort of graceful way of bowing out. So I think we should be, if an event doesn't come back, I don't think we should shake our fists in the air and get torches and pitchforks and try to storm the castle and say, you need to bring this event back. We should talk to the organizers and ask, you know, why didn't it come back? And if they say, well, you know, for the past 5 years, nobody really wanted to run it, and the person who had been running it just doesn't want to do it anymore, and say, fine, okay. And unless somebody volunteers to step up and do it, because most of these events are put on by volunteers, whether it's in the SCA or Living History, they're not making money off of it for the most part. The group might be, but for the most part, the people running it aren't getting paid for what they're doing. So we need to be, as always, you know, be kind before anything and ask questions respectfully to find out what's actually going on, because that'll help those people running the events not burn out.
That's true. And I never really thought of it that way, but there were events that were, like you said, they were dying before the pandemic, and the pandemic effectively coup de grace on these events. But there's nothing pleasant about being the emperor of a dying kingdom, and to take on the mantle of trying to run an event that is in its death throes, regardless of how good or bad you are as an administrator of an event. There's a huge morale hit that can be taken, and to then be the last person who ran an event, or to be the person who tried to run the event and then it looks like it slipped through your fingers, that's not a great way to bolster someone's confidence if they want to come back and do something else, to have that kind of black mark on there, even if that's only they think that way. And that's why I definitely think that we should be, like you said, as attendants, definitely kinder to what we expect, and possibly even lower our expectations, not of necessarily authenticity, but say we're used to events where they have six different activities going concurrently in nine different locations. You know, you've got this big, really complicated, but really fun event. Well, perhaps we shouldn't expect for all of that to happen at once. Perhaps something we should be more grateful for is just the fact that we're together, and be content in the beginning to sort of take our baby steps and attend events that are only one or two activities or have a really narrow scope, and not be critical of the fact that we're going to have these smaller events that might crop up in the vacuum of big events. As a large event falls apart, people are still going to want to do things, but we may not have the wherewithal to create an identical replica. And perhaps there might be two or three events, and they might not be the exact same weekend, but they might be clustered in the same general season. You have a couple fall events instead of one large, massive, like, war. Obviously, I think most of the wars in the SCA context come back, but if this goes, like I said, this is a conversation that extends far outside just the SCA. We might see people who otherwise had their own little clique in a larger event find it more beneficial to just have their event on their own. And so we might see a lot of that cropping up, and that shouldn't be an indicator that there is some failure on the part of the community.
There was one of the big wars that just got canceled. I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Like canceled for good or just canceled for the season?
For good.
Oh, wow. I did not.
For good.
I'm not in that pipeline info. That's crazy.
Yeah. And it was one of the big ones. I want to say it was like, I think it was Estrella. Don't quote me on that, but I think it might have been.
Is it Estrella or Estrella? I guess that's.
Estrella, I guess.
Southern California in me looking at that thinks Estrella, but it might be Estrella. I'm not sure.
Yes, so it was. It was a Estrella war. I guess it's Estrella war. It's in Arizona, so Australia makes it. But
huh. So
yeah, the pandemic basically put the nail in the coffin for that one.
Hmm. Okay.
And so that was a big like Western. So yeah. So like I said, some like you. That's just a like you said. You know, even some of the big events. Although that one, I guess, has been. Attendance had been going down for a while with it, but that's just even the big wars, even the big events aren't insulated from having something like that happen, especially because of like of everything that's happened in the past 2 years. So yeah, I mean, just while I'm saying, you know, to people, don't expect them to all close down, but don't be surprised or too angry if something happens and they don't come back. So.
Or, as I said, they come back in smaller ways. So they might not have the same name. But if you have some of the more active people, say you have a large event, be it a Living History event or an SCA event, and it's a large event, thus it's kind of an umbrella event of smaller individual events. You know, at some point, the event gets so big that it's not really one big thing. It's a conglomeration of a lot of things that happen concurrently. And you have someone who's really active in running one particular one specific area of that event, we should hope to see those people bring their expertise up, perhaps in an event that's focused directly on what they are good at and what they focus on. And we need to, as part of, so one of these things that we can see people burn out on is anytime someone tries something and they devote a ton of their effort to it and it doesn't really, like, people don't seem to care, either that's the perception or they genuinely don't care. That gets a lot of people to kind of give up. And even though perhaps they just had bad timing, they may not try that again, which is where I go back to. We need to be really supportive of smaller events, and we need to really encourage people to do things that they enjoy and do them in such a way that they don't feel discouraged or that their idea was unfounded. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody is going to come up with an idea that genuinely needs to become an event. And discretion is important here. But there will be events that 4 years ago you wouldn't have been, quote, worth your time, that we should really consider supporting. It's the whole idea of, you know, you go and like and share the content and the personalities that you want to see more from, because that feeds the algorithm. It's, you know, you want to spend your, you know, you say you vote with your dollars. You want to spend money on companies. You want to thrive. So when we see people come out with newer events that may not fit the bill of what we're used to, but are still valid and useful and events we want to see more of, we have to make them successful by going to them. But then on the other side of that, if you go to too many events, then the balance between your hobby and your life can get thrown out of whack.
And that is very true as well. There is going to be, especially once everything sort of opens up here, there is going to be a rush for the gates to go to events. I'm already starting to see it already in some SCA events that are opening back up, where people are, well, this weekend I'm going to this one, and next weekend I'm going to that one, and the week after that I'm going to that one. And it's like, whoa, just slow your roll there, folks. Yeah, that is a surefire way to burn yourself out, because you're not taking a reset time for yourself. Now, there are people who have really valid reasons for going to all of them. Maybe they're staffing something. Maybe they have an important role to play at the event. So that's one thing. I would still caution them, you know, hey, you got to slow down a little bit, or you are going to head for a burnout. But that's just the attitude that is going to crop up, is once the events are there to go to, people are going to be like, I have to go to all the events. It's like, well, no, you don't. Make sure you're taking some downtime too.
Well, I feel that. Like, I really want to go to all the events. Where's that meme? It's from I can't remember the creator of the comic now, but it's all the things, you know, I want to go to. I mean, I genuinely want to go to all the events, but as you say, do we need to practice some discretion of ourselves? And that's a hard line to thread, because there's lots of events I want to go to for myself, and there's a lot of events I want to go to specifically, like I said before, to make sure that these events have enough attendance to feel like that it was worth their time to continue to do these types of activities. One of the things that I worry about seeing, and I hope I haven't seen a lot of it yet, but sometimes I keep an eye on the marketplace as a gauge for whether or not people are leaving the hobby or not. Because when there's a rush of complete kits, like sold as lots, that's an indication that you have people who are just quitting the hobby. And what I'd hate to see is the heroin effect, where it's just not as good as it used to be. You know, you don't want people to come back and go, well, why did I do this? Like, why did I waste all my time and money on this? It's not fun, and get really disillusioned. And now there might be people who need to walk away because they were only in it because of inertia. But I'd hate for there to be people who have genuinely a full career left in them that kind of walk away from it because it doesn't feel right anymore. And that's because they weren't able to make it through the growing pains of getting back into what events are going to be for the next decade.
And I've seen some people who, because they weren't able to do this hobby during the pandemic, they found other hobbies that they thought were just going to sort of get them through, give them something to do, but they fell in love with and really love. And they're finding that they feel their time is put to better use toward those hobbies. So they might not come back to the reenactment hobby, or they might not come back at the level that they once were. And we shouldn't, you know, of course, don't try to pressure them. You know, no peer pressure here. We don't do that here. So let them come and go as they please. And yeah, we'll miss them because we like hanging out and having fun, but don't try to pressure people to come back and do it just because you want more people there.
Right. And well, quality over quantity too. That's why I say we should be really, really supportive of smaller events, because we want to encourage high quality events and not just look at the number of attendees as an indicator of whether or not it was good.
And that's a tough thing. And I think we've talked about it with the SCA, because a lot of events are defined successful through the number of attendees, because it's the making of the money at the gate, which pays for the event, holding the event, and pays for the next event, basically gives you a little boost in your coffers for the next event. So smaller events generally aren't as lucrative as larger events, because you're not getting as many people through the door. And I don't know the magic answer to that. There's got to be a way to make it better. We don't want to make ticket prices so expensive that nobody shows up. But there's got to be a balance somewhere to make that work. So don't be amazed if you go to smaller events, if ticket prices go up a little bit, because they may have to pay for it, because, you know, rentals are going up, supplies are going up, inflation is a real thing right now. So it's something to be take in mind when you're doing if you're planning one or attending one. It's like, don't be amazed if the event that costs $10 to go to 2 years ago suddenly costs $15 to go to now.
Right. And I was looking at, I've been pricing out doing a small event in the local area, an immersion event. Matt, we've talked about this a little bit, and then just the location alone, as it was quoted to me 2 months ago, which may or may not be what they quote us come closer to the time I'd like to do this, would be for 10 to 12 people, you'd have to expect to pay $25-$30, and that's before we even bought any food. That's before anything else we'd like to do to make the event happen. So, you know, we could expect possibly upwards of a, you know, $40 to $50 experience, which I guess if you think about it, you can spend a day at a water park for $50, or you could spend a weekend doing living history for $50 or $60. But people have become really used to seeing like, oh, it's a $20 donation to go to this event, or ticket price is $15, or, you know, feast is $10, because, you know, sort of going back to what you were saying before, the number of people that went meant that we were able to do larger bulk style pricing. And, you know, we're going to have to kind of accept that there's going to be a boutique reenactment event market for a little while.
Yeah, I think we'll still have some much larger events. But yeah, I do think we probably will have that smaller, more immersive. The thing is, if you can create a really great experience, people will pay for it. They really will. But you gotta create something and sell it and actually deliver on it. And that can be challenging to do, especially for smaller events, because there isn't as much stuff going on to distract.
Well, also, we're reenactors. We're not necessarily professional marketers. So not all of us are necessarily very good at selling what we have. We can have an amazing event, but if we don't know how to package it to people, they're not going to know what it is we have to offer.
I was wondering if it'd be interesting to speak to some like the European festival marketers, whether they do it themselves, if they farm it out to like a marketing firm or something like that. But that's a completely different conversation. So back to the conversation at hand, burnout, before we get too far down a different road. Especially if you do get to go to a large event, you don't have to do all the things, and you shouldn't feel pressured to do all the things. You can just go to an event to sit there on your butt around a campfire, drinking mead with your buddies, if that's what you want to do, talking. If you just want to dress up in medieval clothes, sit around a campfire and chat, do it. Awesome. And don't let anybody else tell you that you can't do it. If you want to go and do 20 different things at the event, that's fine. Just pace yourself so you're not feeling that if you don't get to do one of the things that you wanted to do, that you're missing out, or that you're being rushed through the things that you do like to do. Because those things, those feelings can lead to that overall burnout feeling of, well, I didn't have a good time at the event, even though you probably did when you were there, but you convince yourself that you didn't because you didn't get to fight and fence and take 5 classes and do archery and also sit around the campfire and talk and also play Tiddlywinks for the Kingdom Tiddlywink Championship. So just pace yourself. I think you'll be more, find 2 or 3 things that you really want to do, spend quality time doing those 2 or 3 or 1 thing or something like that. And just spend that quality time getting back into it and relearning why you liked doing it so much. I think that will make you much happier in the long run than trying to jump in headfirst and do all the things again.
That's an interesting point, the way you phrased it. Remind yourself why you love doing this. I think people have seen a different face of the hobby with it being fully digitized, and it's not for everyone. There are people who don't like doing it online, and, you know, like I said, reminding them why they got into this in the first place, especially if they're feeling disillusioned about all the digital events that they don't enjoy. And it goes back a little bit to when we pace ourselves as event organizers, we need to make sure that we remember that we have people who are going to pace themselves and that we should be pacing ourselves as the event coordinators. And that goes a little bit back to, you know, smaller, don't be too discouraged by numbers if they're smaller than you expect. Say even you go to this large event, you know, and there are as many people at this event as normally attend, but far fewer of them go to each individual activity because, like you said, they're pacing themselves and they're picking and choosing exactly what they like best. Well, that shouldn't be construed as a indicator that fewer people like doing this because more people are just sitting around watching other people do things. Like you said, they very well may just be a lot of people trying to remind themselves why they like this, and they want to pick and choose the things that they're going to do that give them the opportunity to do so without running out of steam and running out of gas.
And I think that's that running out of gas, running out of steam. It's going to be so easy to do that getting back into this, because I'm sure people are going to go to their first in-person event in almost 2 years, and they're just going to be like, yeah, let's go. And they're going to charge out the gates, and they're just going to burn themselves out. And that's what we're trying to stop doing, I guess.
Well, I went to DOK, and the amount of people that showed up was, it was surprising, the number of people that came, the public, but there, you know, we did a little bit of sparring, but there wasn't necessarily a list field, partially because there weren't enough people. But I mean, I took the opportunity to go look at other people's encampments and just to talk to people, and just doing that, like, it was fairly tiresome. Like, I was pretty gassed by the end of the event in a way that I wasn't in previous ones. Part of it's just because I was out of the habit, and part of it was that, you know, there's so much to do that you just can't sit here and do it all every single time you go as much as you'd like to. And so I remember going to DOKs where there was a full active list field, and we were doing a tournament while doing presentations, and it didn't feel like it was too much. But if we had tried to do all of that this time, I would have been completely wrecked. And trust me, I was super tired when I got home, way more tired, not just physically, but like mentally and emotionally from the exertion, not in a bad way, it was fun, but I was way more gassed than I was trying to do any of the ones I had done in the past. And so, because I had this kind of arc where, like, the first couple you went to, I was fresh and new, and it was all, you know, you could push hard because you're younger and it's all fresh and new. And then you kind of hit your rhythm with a couple of them, because, you know, you get a little more mature with the event. And then there was the big cutoff, and coming back to it not so fresh faced and new was a different experience than it was to be that young and bushy-tailed first comer, if that makes sense.
No, it does make sense. We do hit our stride, I guess you could call it. And when that stride is broken, it might take us a little while to regain that stride again. Humans are creatures of patterns. And basically what's happened in the past 2 years is our living pattern that we had developed over how many number of years was effectively stopped. We had to slam on the brakes, stop. And we have had to develop other patterns. So trying to jump back into events with our old pattern is going to be really hard, because we've basically over the past 2 years forgotten that old pattern and adopted a new one. So that's why I said, you know, it's important to be patient with yourself, and it's important to be patient with everybody there. You know, there are going to be some people who are there who are actually going to be kind of nervous about being at large events, even if it's what we call a quote unquote small event. They could be nervous about being out in an event. So, I mean, whatever group rules have been set up for the event, please follow it. Don't try to give the organizers a hard time. Don't complain about it, because really all you're going to do is make yourself miserable and make everybody else miserable. Just do what's being asked, and you'll still have a pretty good time. I mean, it's like the SCA right now has pretty strict mask mandates still, and they have strict vaccination or COVID testing protocols in place. For the most part, they've been universally adopted with little or no problem to it. Some people have made issue with it, and I understand it stinks. It sucks. It's not fun to wear a mask all day at an event. It may not be overly medieval, but at the same time, I mean, we don't really want to give people the bubonic plague and have them die. So it's like, just follow whatever guidelines have been set, and don't give people a hard time, and everyone will be happier all around, because literally people are trying to do their best to make sure these events continue to happen. And it would be very easy for people to just say, well, nobody's following the rules. We're not doing it anymore. And then what do we lose? We lose the event.
Well, we don't want to necessarily start from the, like, we talk about how we're, quote, we should consider these new events. But I mean, at the very, like, realistically, we don't want to start from the bottom. Like, yeah, there's no reason to have to go completely from nothing because we have a bunch of people who tried to do it the right way and they couldn't get the buy-in. And so they gave up. And now it's amateur hour all over again. Not that any of us are professionals, but there are some of us who do events and can run events and have the experience running them. And we don't want to lose that experience because we alienate them by not being good patrons. And that sort of goes back to what you were saying about be kind, be considerate, and be really thoroughly understanding of the limitations that we're going to end up having. And that's where, you know, burnout comes when we spend too much energy for not enough reward. And if we're burning a lot of our energy fighting the restrictions, then that's going to be energy that is used up when we go home and see how much fun did I have? You know, what was my risk and reward at the end of it? And that's necessarily energy we shouldn't be spending.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. That is a great way to put it.
A lot of it really boils down to the same general guideline of be kind and pace yourself. I'm trying to think of any like really fundamentally different points to add on to the end of this particular episode, because that really is what will save the day, is if we just aren't jerks about this and don't try and ignore the fact that we are building on top of all of the loose soil that was put on top of the bedrock. Like we're used to a bedrock that we can build our events off of, and now it's 3.5 feet of volcanic ash and loose sandy loam, and we need to be able to start constructing buildings on that. But we have to acknowledge that we're building in a different environment. And once if we just have everyone buy into the fact that we have to acknowledge the situation, then I think we'll do just fine. And if people just don't do, I guess the hard part is, how do you know what's more than you can do? And that is something that lifters and endurance athletes run into. If they're knocked out for an injury or they fall off the wagon of their particular sport, how do you know how much is too much? Now, a lifter can go, okay, well, I used to be able to lift 250. You know, I'll cut it back by 70%. Maybe I'll just lift, you know, 175, 200, do that for a couple lifts. And then within a week or two, they've kind of found their stride. But with an event, two or three events versus two or three lifts could be an entire season for some people. And so how many people have the self-regulatory power to risk? So say you could have done 6 events physically, and you decide to do 2 so that you pace yourself. And there's a lot of people out there that go, well, what if I could have done those other events? And now I've already missed out 2 years worth of events. And what am I going to do? I'm going to decide to cut myself out of 4 more events for no good reason, because how do I know I can't handle that? And then, of course, the people's estimation of what they are capable of doing is usually pretty poor. And so then that's where we're going to get, and that's where I see the most burnout happening. It's probably not even with the event organizers, really. It's with the people going, and then the person who thinks they can do 6 and only had 4 in them. There's going to be 3 events at the end of the year that have 0 attendance because no one paced themselves.
Yeah, and that's really all going to come down to knowing yourself, knowing your limits. Saying, I could probably do 3 events in a season, maybe, depending on how far apart they were spaced. I don't think I could do 3 weeks in a row. I think that would, at the end of it, I'd be like, why do I do this? I'm not doing it anymore. And I'd probably quit and not do anything at all.
Well, I think with 3 weeks in a row, my family would rebel.
Yeah, my wife would. Yeah, no. She'd fling me from the trebuchet.
She'd be like, this thing finally has a use.
Use, exactly.
Fling.
So, yeah, I guess it does just come down, be honest with yourself, be kind to yourself as well as other people. I know that can be very hard sometimes because it's hard. And it's going to be hard going back into it. It's not an easy Matt and Ari tell you to do three events this next season. We can't tell you that. You gotta make that decision for your own for how many you're going to do. And just try your best. You know, go to one, see how you feel. If you have to miss the next one and then go to the next one, that's fine. If you go to one and you do three different things and the next one you go to, you just sit in front of the campfire for the rest of the day, that's fine too. It's going to be different. It's going to be hard finding our stride again because, you know, a lot of us don't know what the landscape of events are even going to look right. I agree with Ari that I think there probably will be smaller, more custom, like you said, boutique events that pop up. I'd actually like to, I wanted to see that before the pandemic hit. I thought that was been great before. And I think there was a movement in some circles to see that happen more than these big all-encompassing events.
I think we talked about that a bit in our micro event episode, and that might actually be a good template for some of the people who are coming back.
Yeah, that's not a bad thought at all. Those, instead of trying to do large events, instead of doing one large event, try to do three micro events and see how that works for your group or for yourself, because that might be exactly what you needed. That might be, you know, your group may have gotten burned out from doing the one large event every year. Nobody wants to do it anymore. But suddenly you're doing three micro events that everybody's clamoring to come to, and you're successful again. So it's all up in the air, folks. You're going to make 2022 be what it's going to be. And it's either going to be super successful for you and for everyone, as long as things are done in a safe and orderly fashion. Please exit the vehicle and sit. No. as long as they're done in a safe way where people are allowed to ease themselves back into it as meets their comfort level. And who knows, somebody might come back into it with a completely new impression or a new aspect of the hobby because they've had 2 years to do something else.
That's true. Or they may. So you were talking about somebody who, I guess, preface this next line of thought with, don't be too skeptical of something new being brought in. So you're talking about somebody who went and did a different hobby for the pandemic. And some of them are like, okay, well, I didn't have to be in person to do this particular thing, and I found a lot of enjoyment out of it, so I'm just going to keep doing this. And that's what they do now instead. Okay. But what about, think about the people who very well could have gone and done something different or tangential, something vaguely medieval-ish, or something that relates to medieval but wasn't the living history hobby specifically. And then they now have this interesting, different perspective when they come back to it, because they have this whole new skill set that they would never have been able to apply to the hobby. So we might get a grand new influx of really interesting ideas on how to do some of these events or new types of events. And we need to be open to those, because that goes back to the idea of discouraging people from trying something new. Someone puts a whole ton of work into something new and interesting, and everyone goes, well, that's weird and new and interesting, but it's also new and interesting and weird, so I'm not going to buy into it. Well, that's a great way to discourage them from ever doing so again. But if we see something new and interesting come out, like, give things a chance. We have this opportunity to try new things, effectively a cold read on all these possible things that people have had years to just percolate on. You know, they haven't had an opportunity to try and put it into action, or they've been rebuffed from putting it into action because they've been going to these events that are always quote done this way. Well, it's not going to get done that way anymore. Maybe we can try something that really ups the value of our hobby.
I like the sound of that. I'd like to see the value of our hobby upped, because I think it's a really great hobby. So I don't want people to get burned out. I want them to go and have fun and do more and do awesome things.
Well, keep in mind, that's a you have inspired yet another thought. You know, this is supposed to be fun, guys. Like, lads and lassies, this is supposed to be fun. So if you're not having fun, that might be your indicator that you're doing too much, and scale it back a little bit.
There's an old saying in the SCA of, if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. Now, we all have our own definitions of what fun is, of course, but it still, if you're not, this is a hobby, if you're not enjoying what you're doing, then maybe it's time to swap things up a bit, just to see if you can get the joy back to it.
Yeah, because, you know, again, what's the point if you're not enjoying yourself? Because it's not a job for most people. And if it is a job, I'm fairly confident it doesn't pay enough. And so if you're doing this for any other reason than you're enjoying yourself, then you really need to take stock of what you're using your very valuable time on. And again, we don't want to discourage anybody from participating, but at the same time, we want to make sure that those who do come back to play this game with us in the future are doing so because this is what they want to be doing, not because this is what they always had done.
You always have more fun with people who want to be there than with people who think they should be there or have to be there.
Absolutely. I can't add anything to that one.
No.
So yeah, take this opportunity to take stock of why you do it, what you get out of it, what's the value to you, and then let's focus on that for a while. And, you know, as a community, I think we showed through this, all of us doing our own little digital events or doing stuff on our own and sharing it online so that people could give us our attaboys, I think we've proven that our hobby is stronger than everyone doing the same thing at the same event. And while mass events are cool and we should definitely work on doing some of them because there were mass battles that we'd like to represent and stuff like that, and medieval folk tended to congregate in groups, but we have shown that we are stronger than having to all be to lockstep doing the same thing at big events. And we can have a valid experience that the rest of the community derives benefit from in smaller doses. So we can't be scared of the fact that there might be smaller numbers, because the fact that we have any numbers is a testament to the endurance of the people in our community.
Now, I will say that Ari and I are scared of smaller numbers.
Well, smaller
listener numbers. So go give us the most stars. Go give us the most stars you can. 5 stars on whatever you listen to us on.
I think they only ever give us 5 to choose from. If you get more than 5 to choose from, go ahead. But standard is 5.
11. My stars go to 11.
Yeah, yes. It will. You know, some dials do have 11. Sometimes they have to break off to get there. Anyway. Yes. No, I like that. I think this was a good, I think these are some good thoughts to drive us through. And especially we're getting into the winter now. Events naturally slow down over the winter. So we're really going to be looking at what do we see on the horizon for the new year and the spring. And that's going to be really telling, is what does spring 2022 in reenactment look like? And we all have a responsibility to making that great.
And if there's some event that you're really looking forward to go to this year, the upcoming year, or if you're nervous about going to events or you want to try to plan your own event, let's talk about it and put it in the comments underneath this episode on our Facebook page. We'd love to talk about it with you and have you join our conversation.
Absolutely. We love hearing from you. And we'd love to actually hear from you, too, if you want to send a voice clip through Messenger on Facebook or to howtomedieval@gmail.com. We'll play it on the show. And maybe it'll be part of the show conversation. Maybe it'll be a question that needs answered. But we definitely want to hear back from you. We love the discourse with the public.
And we also love Paul Butler for being so kind and letting us use his music as our intro.
Absolutely. And you can find his music in the link below at Paul Butler's Music. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, folks.